called Mom and told her not to panic, but she did. She found a substitute for herself, the substitute. We drove around and around and around the neighborhood, yelling, Howard! And Dad! And not seeing you anywhere. We did this for 3 hours, so scared. We would get home and call the police, we thought. But when we got home, there you were. We didn't know whether to be angry or to be relieved. Your nails had been painted silver. Your nails caught the light, and they sparkled. Today, Mom brought home a heavy melon. You could smell how sweet it was from the outside, which was cracked. We each ate a quarter of a melon. It was my first in years because Joel couldn't stand cantaloupe. Cantaloupe. It's delicious. I'd forgotten. Today you told me that the Santa Ana winds are sometimes called the devil winds. When they blow, the police department reports increases in domestic abuse and homicides. On TV, we see fires tearing over hills, fueled by dried-out vegetation. At home, a confused wren throws its body over and over against the kitchen window. He sits on the sill, casts a puzzled glance, and tries again and again. You blame the wind. Linus and I drew straws to see which of us would deal with the body. It was like a toy. It was so small. This morning, Bonnie called to tell me about a fight she got into with Vince, and she said, I blame the moon and the margaritas. The moon was full and planetary forces were in opposition, bringing confrontation to relationships, she said. When the earthquake came, it was 5.2 on the Richter scale. But you seemed not to even notice, like we were on a flight and simply experiencing regular turbulence. The epicenter was Brea. There were aftershocks for a week, and then nothing. Whether the moon or the margaritas, Vince broke up with Bonnie last week for inarticulate reasons, and she was quietly mourning. This was what, she said, she had wanted all along, but still. On a Sunday, I surprised her at her apartment. Bonnie was in her glasses and pajamas. She had lopped her own hair into the tiniest pixie cut and looked striking. She yawned, opening the door. Let's go, I said. She got in the car and I drove. Outside it was hot, 100 degrees at least, maybe more. We refilled our bottles with water from gas station bathrooms. In one of the bathrooms, a woman was hand-feeding her rabbit through the grating on a cat carrier. After one of the gas stations, Bonnie filled her water bottle with blue slushy. We stopped in Hadley for date shakes, and in Palm Springs, we checked into a motel that was supposedly a former mission. We watched the Home Shopping Network and thought about spending all our money on tennis bracelets because it was true. They looked very pretty in the studio lighting. When I was little, I thought that tennis bracelets were called tennis bracelets because the average wrist was a circumference of a tennis ball. Even while believing it, I had the feeling that it wasn't true. The saleswoman on the television now explained that in 1987, the tennis player Chris Everett was wearing a diamond bracelet, and in the middle of the match, the bracelet broke, and they stopped the game so all of the diamonds could be recovered. When the sun came up in the morning, we saw our sunburned arms more clearly. My left and Bonnie's right. When I pressed her arm, it turned white. I pressed hi and watched it fade. She pressed a sad face. What's a hairdresser's favorite herb? I said. I don't know. What? Cilantro. What? It's in how you say it. Cilantro. Ha ha, she said finally and smiled for me. We had written swear words on the dirty car, and on the drive back, the sun shone in a lovely way through the clear-lettered swears. Today, you and I sanded the patio. We each had hand sanders going to cover ground faster. We're wearing goggles and earplugs, and when Mom shouted at us about dinner, we didn't hear it or see her. We sanded it down, and then we wiped off the sawdust with tack cloth, and our hands were still sticky when we ate dinner. They stuck to our forks. We shook our hands, and they stuck. Today was so hot that Bonnie, Linus, and I found the old kiddie pool, rinsed it out with the hose, and sat together in just our swim bottoms in the cold, shallow water until it warmed, at which point we'd top ourselves off with more cold water from the hose. Dad was out with Theo, and Bonnie had brought contraband vodka. So we mixed Kool-Aid with the vodka in a big thermos. Our mission was to drink it all, destroy the evidence. After that, we climbed the ladder to the top of Dad's half-painted patio cover and lay on our backs to dry on the partially pink slats. Bonnie curled up next to Linus, who was propped drowsily on an elbow, clutching in his free hand the bulb of his Kool-Aid-filled wine glass. It had reached the point in the day when Linus started talking about teleportation. It was what he always wound up talking about after a certain number of drinks. I always wound up talking about whales. An amazing thing I can't really get over is that their shit isn't solid, but liquid. Also, it's nutritious. Another weird thing is that pigs don't get milked, I said. We don't have pig milk. Because piglets drink it all? Bonnie said. Because piglets drink it all.
There's something beautiful about that, Linus said. Beautiful and perfect.
We toasted to piglets and didn't notice Theo approach.
What's happening up there? He yelled, startling Linus, who nearly fell off.
Who are you? Bonnie called at first. Then, deciding she didn't care, she said,
Drink the Kool-Aid.
Of course, I said nothing like an idiot. My fear was a bratwurst, sobering.
How's the Home Depot?
Asked Linus. You had wanted to spend a gift card.
He bought one of those pots that boils water.
Isn't that what all pots do?
The kind that plugs in, you know, to the wall.
Hey, the blonde the other day, Bonnie said all of a sudden. Who's she? They look like chums, she and your dad. When had she seen Joan, I wondered. Don't you mean, I said, that she looked like chum, the chopped fish and fish oils dumped overboard to attract fish?
I give it 6 years, swear to God, Linus said. Teleportation. I'm willing to bet on this. I better go, Theo said.
Don't leave, Bonnie said.
I better go, he said again, and he went.
Today, Theo came to pick you up to watch the game and grab a bite, and while you were fetching your things, we stood at the door making very, very small talk. You were taking your sweet time. There was an aftershock just then. It helped. It was something to talk about. Today, we planted pumpkins and squash in the garden. We ate too many figs from the tree, and it made us giddy, and our hearts beat fast like we drunk too much coffee. All summer we've been trying to get a handle on the cheatgrass in the yard. Some things you try to fight, and others you have to let defeat you, I guess is the thing. I gave up on birdseed. I filled the feeder with plums and let the scrub jays have at it. I've been having the same dream every night this week, a dream serialized. It picks up every night where it left off the night before. It must have something to do with the heat. In the dream, we are all together. You, Mom, Linus, me, living in a big house. We have pets. We have 58 dogs, all types and breeds. You feed them and you care for them and you are yourself again. You can remember everything. The first night, the first dream, a Labrador runs away and you are so upset. In the dream, we go looking for her. We post signs around the neighborhood, but she's nowhere to be found. She's gone for good. And we notice that you have forgotten the past year's events. After that, it's a dachshund, and then a poodle. And the more dogs that run away, the more you forget. Finally, we realize what's been happening. You've been using the dogs as mnemonic devices to recall whole years. You were connecting eyes and ears to specific feelings or events of a given 12 months. A baseball game to a shade of pupil. A fishing trip to a puppy's nail. After 10 dogs run away, you can't remember anything from the past 10 years. And then it's 15. And then you forget Linus. And then you forget me. Mom can know without counting when there are 30 dogs left. She can recognize you at age 30 when you first met. Flirting, earnest, trying so hard to impress her. Last night, I dreamt that there were 6 dogs left. In the dream, you sat on the floor running your hands over a retriever the color of pale hay. Today, you said, "Did you know that we share 50% of our DNA with bananas?" "Men share 51," Mom said, deadpan, not looking up. We looked at each other. A dick joke. Today, you, Linus, and I finished painting the patio cover pink to match the house. "That wasn't so bad, right?" I asked you.
"Well, no," you said, surveying your work. "But it isn't so good."
And Linus, covered in pink, started to laugh. Then you, then me, all of us, pink and laughing like lunatics. September. Today I cooked you spaghetti and the sauce tasted plain and sour. Sugar and fat are bad for you. I didn't want to include anything bad. But today you said, "Think of all the mice the scientists are studying. All those mice with Alzheimer's. What do they forget?" "They forget many things, but they never forget how much they like peanut butter." "Okay," I said. "Okay, okay, okay." And added more butter and a little sugar to the sauce, which made it much better. Today we drove to the beach. We sat in the sand and ate pretzels and drank lemonade from a stand. A dog and his owner were standing nearby. The owner was holding a tube of new-looking tennis balls. He pitched one toward the surf and said very enthusiastically, "1,000! Go get it, boy!" And when the dog stayed put, he looked truly crestfallen. "Aw, 1,000, he said. "You fucking suck-ass bitch." On the way home, we stopped at the coin-operated car wash. We had a plan. I put the quarters in, $2 for 5 minutes, and you scrubbed with a scrub brush while I held the hose and sprayed it down. When we vacuumed the seats, we found a $100 bill. And on the way home, we debated how to spend it. Today, Theo came to pick you up. The two of you were getting coffees and mumbled hello like a teenage boy there to pick up his date. "Hello," I tried to say coolly and responsibly, like a parent. Today, you asked about my job at the hospital. I'd always thought you were uninterested, disappointed even at what I'd chosen. An ultrasound measures the speed of sound as it passes through different substances in the body, I told you. I told you about what I did for a living, how I scanned people's bodies and took pictures of their soft tissues, how I liked breaking the news to couples who were having twins, seeing the shock and then the excitement or the horror. There was a day in that month before I left, I watched grooms give an echocardiogram, and she showed me this new equipment that could isolate a heart. Any organ you could isolate. With this program, you could see whatever organ float as though in space. Later, when I steeled a patient for her tracheotomy and held a club-footed baby for his tired mother, I thought about that heart, alone and spinning. Today, you were sitting in front of the computer. An actor's face was tiled on the screen. Later, on the same computer, I saw the tabs you had open. Searches for electricity and Berlin and memory improvement. An hour today, you spent shouting. You said we'd stolen money from you. You threw your pillows over the fence and into the Grover's pool. You broke the legs off of your dining table chair. You smashed almost all of our drinking glasses. In a matter of days, Lung had said, it can go from being manageable to scary. And after you'd frightened us all completely, you sat in the living room and quietly ate a banana you found in the piano bench. And after that, you wept. You said you were sorry after that. You said you wanted to help. You said you wanted to help us get ready for when things would be worse. We wrapped everything breakable. All of Mom's favorite colored glasses we wrapped in newspaper and put away. We hid the knives. We picked out colorful plastic tumblers at the store. 2 sets of doorknobs was your idea, for the front and back doors, working doorknobs lower. There's a knob in the regular position, one that doesn't turn. You can't actually turn the knob to get out of the house. The functional knob would be lower on the door near our ankles. Trying the knob located in the regular position, you'll assume the door is broken, and this will deter you from leaving. When things get worse, that is. Today we marked handles and the light switches with red nail polish. Today we separated everyone's dark and white clothes as though for an enormous load of laundry. All the darks we donated to the Goodwill. It was on the forum where I had read, dark colors can appear threatening to the patient with dementia. Black clothing can cause anxiety. If you put a black rug on the floor, an individual in the disease's later stages will be afraid to step over it for fear that it is a hole. Today you held your open hand out and I shook the pills into it, same as every day. Fish oil, magnesium, vitamins D and C and A, ginkgo biloba. Hello, water, you said, holding the glass against the moonlight and shaking the pills like they were dice you were ready to roll in your other hand. Goodbye, vitamin. We bought nightlights because darkness, lack of sunlight, causes confusion and disorientation. The increased agitation and anxiety is called sundowning. Lung recommended that we keep a light on at all times. I tried using the nightlight in my room, but quit. I couldn't fall asleep. Someone on the online forum also said, imagine you are preparing the home for an inquisitive child. We looked at a childproofing list. We put away anything you could choke on. You described the process of childproofing the house for me, how I would stagger around like a small drunk person, making loud and confident proclamations. Today, buying refills of vitamins, I bought two of each type, so from now on, I can take them with you. Today we cooked dinner. We baked a hummingbird cake for dessert. Pecan halves on the top, various spices. Why hummingbird? You ask the question, but we didn't bother to look it up. Just because. We've locked away the scissors and the knives in a drawer using one of those plastic childproof locks. No more poisonous plants in case you decide down the line to eat them. We got rid of everything inedible. We posted emergency numbers to the refrigerator, doctor, police, fire department, the poison control center. Today I applied for sonography certification. It's a 2-year program. When it's through, I can be a cardiac sonographer. Today I found an almond with a slight curve and I didn't eat it. I found another nut with a curve. I put the two anomalous nuts into a jar because, well, what can I do? October. Today I looked glum, I guess, and you told me it was perfectly normal. It's called the fall, my love, you said. Today we ate grapes from a mug and met a white dog that looked like David Bowie. Today we watched something on PBS about the evolution that's happening right now, right under our noses. Cliff swallows in Nebraska are evolving shorter wings so as not to be hit and killed by cars. Otter penis bones are shrinking because of pollutants in English and Welsh rivers. Earlier I'd stepped on a coffee cup lid and liked it, then thought, what if, someday, we evolve to like the crunch of coffee cup tops more than leaves, and the streets just stay filled with them? Today we went for a run together at the high school track. Though it makes no sense, you're in better shape than me. You lapped me handily, pumping your fist as you did. Today Theo came over with a 6-pack of root beer and chicken taquitos and Monopoly. We spent 4 hours as a hat, boot, terrier, and thimble, which Theo wanted but let me have. You bought Boardwalk and Park Place, and Theo accumulated property after inexpensive property, while I languished in jail, seemingly forever. It was Linus who won, in his quiet, diligent way. After he left, you said, I'm senile, but I'm not blind. What? I said. That wasn't so bad, was it? You said. Today at the store, you stole a chicken by mistake. What happened was we lost each other at the store, and after I had paid for our things, I found you outside clutching this chicken like it belonged to you, like it was your motorcycle helmet. I knew immediately it was theft. You hadn't brought your wallet with you. What do we do? I said. panicked, and you shushed me, and we walked briskly to the car. We should bring it back, I said, at home later.
Don't be ridiculous, you said, and we put it into our Ronco rotisserie.
Today we went to the Boomers. That used to be a family fun center that used to be a Bullwinkle's. We played skee ball. We ate a funnel cake. We shook hands with a man in a dirty moose costume. We sat in a photo booth, and a few minutes later it spat out a strip of photos of us. Today we went to the pumpkin patch. The same patch where, when I was 7, a pumpkin farmer reprimanded me for picking one up by its stem. That same farmer was there today. He still looked dour. All the pumpkins were $4.99, regardless of their size. You picked out a small, pale white pumpkin, and I chose one in regular orange with the longest, most twisted stem. At home, we carved the faces, and you told me mine was familiar. That makes no sense, I argued with you. Later, you rummaged in a shoebox until you found it. A photo of me, 7 years old, grinning stupidly with a pumpkin I'd just carved. It was this pumpkin's twin with an identical face. Today, I found an avocado skin on the dish rack, like a drying dish. Today, I saw you and Mom in the living room, reading, sitting very close. My foot fell asleep, you said to her. You took her hand and placed it on your foot and asked Mom, "Can you feel it? Tingling?" November. Today a court summons came in the mail for me. I don't know how they managed to find me. On Monday, I'm supposed to show up for jury duty. The word testify, you said, comes from testicles. Men used to swear by their balls. Today, Mom told me that she ate apples during both pregnancies because she heard it'd keep Linus and me from having asthma. You'd shave the wax off them with a butter knife, was what she told us when we asked about it. Because earlier we had watched you diligently shave the wax off a pippin apple. I had picked my phone up without noticing who it was, and the voice asked how you were, and the voice belonged to Joel. Now we were having a conversation. I was in the grocery store. I was staring at a pink pyramid of foreign tomatoes. I said you were good, and he said, "That's good." He said, "Tell him I say hi. Tell your mom hi, too." Joel says hi. This is how I'm telling you. The next thing he said was, "I'm getting married." "Congratulations," I said, the way people do. "Kristen is actually pregnant," he admitted. "Congratulations," I said again, and asked how she was and how far along. "It's scary," he laughed. "It's exciting." I had an idea of what was coming, what was inevitable. In no time at all, I would feel bereft and intractable. Joel's getting married, I could handle, but Joel's making a new human with Kristen? For some reason, I couldn't. Bonnie was on vacation in Mexico with her parents. I dialed Theo. "Hello," I said.
"Hi there," he said.
"What do you say to a night of heavy drinking?"
"What's the occasion?" Theo asked.
"Oh," I said. "No reason."
"I don't believe you," he said.
I could tell he was smiling.
"But I accept." "On one condition," he added.
"Anything," I said.
"No getting sad drunk,"
he said, very seriously.
"I won't," I said, just as seriously.
We met at Nellie's downtown, where you used to like to go, I know. While I stood by the bar waiting for Theo, a man asked if I was Chelsea, and another man asked if I was Audrey. "Why is that?" I asked, when Theo showed up.
"It's a popular spot," he explained, "for blind dates."
This was because there weren't many watering holes to choose from in town. Theo pointed out the regulars. There was a man who looked like Hemingway. Theo said he's been there ever since the day he outlived his wife. Whenever he is here, he buys 2 drinks, one for her, which he intends not to drink. The first he drinks slowly, but in the end he can't bear to let the second go to waste. He always drinks them both. There was a man named Joseph who spent years in prison and in that time had managed to loosen and ultimately extricate one eye with a coffee stirrer. His left eye. Because he'd heard about the heightened senses of the blind and wanted to better hear his heart in case it ever stopped. There was Leonard, who, after a few drinks, will stand on the bench outside throwing a cotton sheet into the air, trying to catch some old ghost. With a bed sheet? I asked.
You have a better idea?
Theo said. What Leonard figures is that a ghost is something like wind, and the sheet will catch the shape.
It's not about catching, like a trap,
Theo explained. More like capturing, like a photograph. Leonard sipped quietly at something that resembled a Shirley Temple, stood and fed several quarters into the jukebox. His selection, it turned out, was Blue Bayou. Somebody was telling his friend in a conspiratorial way,
Listen, Louis, you're never gonna see a name in lights unless you change your name to Exit.
There was a couple that looked to be on a date, with numerous empty and uncollected glasses in front of them. The woman was fishing the lime out of the man's drink, dropping it into the clear contents of her own cup. A way of flirting, I guess.
You're so pretty for no reason,
the man said, thoughtfully. He said it like he was proud to have arrived at that insight.
Don't get drunk,
Theo said all of a sudden, noticing me. He held my gaze.
Don't get drunk, Ruth.
And then, to take my mind off what he knew it had troublingly rested on, he started rattling off trivia. He asked me, did I know that when you get a kidney transplant, they leave your original kidneys in your body? The third kidney goes in your pelvis. He asked, did I know that it rains diamonds on Jupiter? Did I know that Russia is bigger than Pluto? And I asked, did he know that Robert Kearns, inventor of the intermittent windshield wiper, was blind in one eye from a champagne cork on his wedding night? And Theo said yes. For whatever reason, he did happen to know that. And did I know that he was tangled up in patent infringement lawsuits with Ford and Chrysler because after Kearns had tried to sell the technology to them, they installed his wipers anyway? He won against Ford and Chrysler, but lost against GM and Mercedes. His wife, Phyllis, whom he had married that champagne cork night, ultimately left him because all the litigation got to be too taxing. He explained that he had trouble sleeping through the night. He woke up in the middle of the night almost every night. The trick was not forcing yourself to go back to sleep. The trick was to eat a bowl of cereal, go on the internet, and read list after list of facts until you're lulled into something like sleep. All of a sudden, Joseph materialized in front of us.
She's Howard's kid,
he said to Theo. I am, I said.
There's a resemblance,
he said to me.
Tell your dad Joseph says hi.
By the jukebox, Leonard was repeating,
I'm odd,
or maybe I'm odd, over and over. I'm selfish, I started to say. I stopped, realizing that saying so was itself pretty selfish. I hung my head. I remembered the time Joel and I had met after work to have a couple of drinks at the bar down the street and how we'd meant to stop by for only happy hour and how we wound up playing pool until midnight. How, outside the bar, a man was standing with a cardboard sign that said,
Wake up, you drunkards, and weep.
This was attributed to the Bible. Joel, chapter 1, verse 5. How hilarious and how appropriate it had seemed then. When I brought it up months later, Joel said,
What are you talking about?
Because he didn't remember it. He'd forgotten it completely. And it was at that point I realized that I could remember something and he could remember something different, and if we built up a store of separate memories, how would that work? And would it be okay? The answer, of course, in the end, was no.
That's not allowed, Theo said. Despair's off limits. That was the condition, remember?
I don't know, I said. What do we do instead?
Instead?
He said, like he was really considering the question.
Basketball.
Another couple was outside the bar.
We had a time.
The man was agreeing to something or other the woman had said, a smoke in his hand. She seemed distraught. He'd taken a drag and blown so they looked to be cocooned in smoke.
But times end, the man was saying. Even the good ones, especially the good ones. That's what they do.
Everybody, everywhere, I think, is always talking about the same shitty thing. We made our way to the park. Officially, it was closed. Unofficially, there wasn't anybody around to enforce the rule. We stopped at the Shell station on the way and picked up a six-pack of those skinny cans of sugary black coffee. We played horse first, then one-on-one. I knew he expected me to be terrible. Everyone does. I look like the sort of girl who throws like a girl. But I can play basketball because you taught me. I like to surprise people with that. We played until the coffee ran out. We sat on a bench, just sat, and watched the sunlight up the sky over the mountains. We sat close because we had no choice. The other half of the bench was covered in bird shit. He didn't try anything, and I didn't try anything, and we only sat, without thoughts, tired and colder than we wanted to admit was comfortable. It was, I admit, nice. It felt like a stupid movie, and I knew I would waste all of the next day sleeping to make up for it. And all of a sudden, I hated that word, waste. Wished it didn't exist. Wished I'd been braver on so many long-gone occasions. Wished things were not as they were. Why don't we get married? Was how Joel had proposed. Why don't we? He liked to say. What a chicken shit way to say things. I don't believe you, I said to Theo.
What?
About the kidneys, I said. I texted Grooms to see if it was true, and even though it was who knows what time, she texted back immediately that it was. What else don't I know? I said, and Theo grinned. The sun had come up fully by now, and he squinted, smiled. We walked to his car. There were sweet gum leaves stuck to it. The dew had affixed them like glue. The leaves were beautiful, the color of Fanta. He opened the door, and on the way home, we listened to the soft rock station, which was already playing Christmas songs. Theo sang along to Little Drummer Boy. At home, you were reading the newspaper and eating a pancake with your hands, dipping it into the syrup. This week, a poster showed up on our street describing a missing cat as muscular. There was a bike handcuffed to the bike rack outside the post office. We watched a man throw a ball to his dog, who obediently fetched it. But the ball seemed to be getting smaller and smaller. When we came up close, we saw that the ball wasn't a ball at all, but a hard, round dinner roll. Dr. Lung today didn't look happy or sad. He just looked. There were pigeons wandering the parking lot of the medical center. They appeared lost, though of course they weren't. They're famously never lost. They're the type of birds that carry messages. The likelier explanation was that they were hungry. The birds, roving the lot, looked hungry. "Let's go," I said. I drove us back to the In-N-Out we'd passed on the way. I ordered two strawberry shakes and a box of fries and handed one of the shakes to you. We sat on the curb and fed fries to pigeons. We saw Dr. Lung make his way to his parked car. It was a compact Japanese car that looked recently washed. At first, I almost didn't recognize him, because without the white coat, he looked like anybody. Someone's goofy cousin. "This is a nice day," you said. I'd been wondering if feeding the birds was jogging a memory for you. I'd been preoccupied with wondering. There was a breeze, and the breeze was carrying the smell of eucalyptus, and the day was cool, but not too cool. You repeated about how nice the day was, either because you really wanted me to know it, or because you'd forgotten you already mentioned it. But all of a sudden, it didn't matter what you remembered or didn't, and the remembering, it occurred to me, was irrelevant. All that mattered was that the day was nice, was what it was. Today we went to the bowling alley where it turns out Sam still works and looks exactly the same, with hair the same color and shape as a Q-tip. He could still look at our feet and give us shoes in the exact sizes. You kept picking up the heaviest ball. "That one's too heavy, Dad," Linus and I kept saying. "It'll be fine," Mom said. You bowled three strikes in a row, and Mom did a happy dance. You were given a turkey. Thanksgiving dinner. We've been trying to figure out why the honeybell tree out front never used to produce any fruit, but this year won't stop. Nobody has a satisfying explanation for why. Mom thinks rainfall and you keep insisting the trees triumphed, finally, over a silent and murderous disease. I think it has to do with bees and their unknowable bee whims. I like to watch insect specials when nothing good is on TV, and nothing ever is anymore. There's a lot to admire about bees, I think. For one thing, they know exactly what to do in life. They have jobs and they do them. Also, they see life frame by frame with those panels for eyes, like movie screens. They recognize faces, I told Mom. You're saying they missed you? She joked. I was in the kitchen when you approached. You cast a look of concern at the colander of cauliflower.
No more crucified vegetables,
you said. But they died for you, Dad.
No more.
Lasagna?
Lasagna,
you agreed. And so I made a lasagna. The sauce we made with a sweet onion and sweet butter and pork that I braised. We ate it with big spoons and no vegetables were sacrificed in the process. While I was mopping the kitchen, a creature, winged, flew my way. After a few lame swats, I propped the broom against the wall and decided to flee. I headed to Theo's. Can cockroaches fly? I asked when he opened the door.
Is that why you're here?
He meant to sound exasperated, I knew, but he was grinning. It's looking good, this place, I said. He patted his new couch in the way somebody might gingerly pat a stranger's dog to indicate that I should have a seat. It was a nice couch, and I said so. But I'm no expert, I said.
You're not?
Nope.
What are you an expert in?
Nothing, I said. Then, after some consideration, the fetal position.
You're supposed to get into a fetal position during a bear attack, aren't you?
Theo said.
Because it indicates to the bear that you're not a threat.
The fetal position, exactly. And get this, I know all kinds. Last night, Theo dropped by for dinner, and afterward, the five of us walked to the park. And then you, Mom, and Linus peeled off, citing exhaustion. So Theo and I sat on a bench by the water, trying to catch the comet that we'd been told by the weatherman was going to pass.
That duck over there is having a drink,
Theo said, pointing to the duck on the side of the pond with his bill probing the mouth of a tall boy. What do you think that duck is going to do without inhibitions?
The real question is what inhibitions does that duck have in the first place?
No more flying south for the winter.
No more Mr. Nice Duck. No more politely accepting stale bread from strangers.
I'm more interested in the morning after. A duck's self-loathing.
A duck's regret.
Look, I said, cutting to the chase. I told him I felt generally positive about him. He said he felt generally positive about me, too. He gave me an awkward hug, and later I found that he'd put a peppermint in my jacket pocket. Today, like a lot of days lately, you forget some names.
The one I'm carrying a torch for, you said.
Mom? Annie? I said. Are you talking about Annie?
That's the one, you said.
The mind tells you what or whom to love, and then you do it. But sometimes, it doesn't. Sometimes the mind plays tricks, and sometimes the mind is the worst. But I'm trying, I really am, not to think about those things. In the garage, I found my rock tumbler. You and Mom gave it to me for Christmas years ago. Inside, I found a smooth and beautiful misshapen pearl. One of my baby teeth, I remembered. Today, I gave you my old seashell collection. You arranged all the shells at the bottom of your fish tank in a pretty way.
Thank you for the exoskeletons,
you said to me. You're welcome. I said to you. Today you and Linus both left for somewhere, and I don't know where you went or what you did, but when you came home, you sat together on the couch and shared a Sprite. Today was Thanksgiving. I stared stupidly at the turkey, not knowing what to do with it, even after spending the month in a sea of cookbooks on turkey preparation, on loan from the library, You would not believe the vastness of literature and debate over wet versus dry brine, stuffed versus unstuffed, breast side up or down. I cried uncle, my only uncle. I called John.
The bigness is irrelevant, he said, sounding fed up. Think of it as a large chicken.
But still, John sacrificed his whole afternoon to help stud the ham with peppercorns, while, in the living room, you and Mom napped straight into the evening, her feet inside the bottoms of your pants. Partway through dinner, there was a knock on the door. I opened the door, and there was Grooms, looking coiffed and perfect as usual. She had Kevin in her arms and a crate of pears at her feet.
Hi,
she said. I screamed and hugged Grooms as hard as I thought I could without killing Kevin, who was between us. She'd driven down on the vague invitation to spend Thanksgiving with her ex-husband's family in Laguna Beach. Brady had said something cryptic to her about wanting to meet Kevin. The house was in a gated community. She gave Brady's sister's name to the security guard. She circled the house a few times, changed her mind, and headed here.
I don't know what I was thinking, she said, sheepish.
You're fine, I said, and ushered them in. You and Mom took turns with Kevin in your laps, spooning in potato.
He's so fat, you exclaimed happily.
You bounced him on your knee. Today you put a whole cabbage into our Ronco Showtime rotisserie. Today, into the enormous salad I was making, you slam-dunked a whole tomato. Today you took my hand and filed a nail, the way people do to babies. Today I caught you in the garage eating the peaches from the earthquake kit. I joined you. We drank the syrup, and then we drank the packets of water. Here I am, in lieu of you, collecting the moments. Collecting. I guess that's the operative word. Unless it's moments. December. Linus, who still loves Christmas the most of any of us, did the decorating. He walked around and around all the trees in the front yard, winding each of them with Christmas lights. He spray-painted the oranges gold. He came home from the supermarket with red and green candy corn. Reindeer corn, the packaging called it. He built a gingerbread house and tasked me with the job of applying the icing mortar. He bestowed upon each of us a brick-sized gift in snowman wrapping paper, wrapped so expertly and taped so excessively, it would be impossible to unwrap and rewrap the gift without detection. You said, "You'll be free to go soon." You said, "I'm still your father, and I still make the rules around here." And when I said, "Sure, Dad, what are my rules?" You said that after Christmas, you wanted me to leave. You didn't want me feeling obligated to stay. You said you didn't want me feeling guilty. You said you didn't want me seeing you act Looney Tunes. Looney Tunes. That's what you said. I told you that I would think about that rule. You said there was no thinking about it. You were my father. A rule is a rule. I told you I was a grown-ass woman, unfortunately, and didn't have to listen to you. Theo and I went to a restaurant. A date, I guess you could call it. And in fact, you did when you opened the front door. You whistled at us when I climbed into his car. At the bistro, our server struggled to remember the pie list. Theo put glasses on to read the menu. We watched a waitress, who didn't think anyone was looking, down half-full beer cans left by patrons. Later, we walked along a street that was remarkable in that it was completely unremarkable. There were no stores of any interest. There were two tanning salons. Theo took my hand, and I didn't try to wrest it free.
"The cat's name was Fluffy," he said.
And when I imagined Theo as a little boy getting his hand scratched up by a mean cat with an inappropriate name, my heart went insane. Later that week, there was Theo calling and Theo saying, "Look at the moon." Us sharing a bottle of bourbon he tucked into a mitten. Me saying, "How farsighted are you?" Pulling him really, really, really close. So close that you could string a tightrope tautly from his pupils to my pupils, and an insect could tiptoe across it. "What can you see?" I asked. When he didn't answer right away, I flinched a little.
"Enough," was what he said finally.
It might have been an insult. It felt like the correct answer. There was a night, a few nights later, at his place when he thought I was asleep and said,
"You're too perfect."
I knew I should protest. I had a list of reasons with which I could. I also knew I couldn't, because we'd both be embarrassed if I did. This morning, we opened Linus's impeccably wrapped presents. He'd gotten each of us a walkie-talkie, which he'd labeled with our names. You and Linus watched a Christmas movie marathon on TV, and Mom and I cooked dinner. We invited everyone. John and his girlfriend Lisa, and the Nazarians. Mom cooked the turkey, and I helped with 100 other things. A pecan pie with chocolate in it, 2 stuffings, macaroni and cheese, vegetables, both cruciferous and not. I made unsuccessful gingerbread men. The recipe was a stinker. Mom had always recommended eating the legs first so your gingerbread men wouldn't run away. It's something I still do, I noticed yesterday, taking the legs off these bad cookies without a second thought. Cleaning out my purse earlier in the week, I had found Cookery by Carl, the endive guy, and I made his recipe for boats. Endive leaves and cheese and nuts and honey. My earliest memory, I think, I've narrowed down to this. I'm 2 or 3 maybe. I'm with you in Riverside in the 1-bedroom apartment where you and Mom slept on the bottom bunk and me on the top. In that same apartment, the next year, I caught pneumonia, remember? And you gave me a sponge bath? And my temperature rose, and now I know the worry you probably had. The worry that I'd have brain damage. Anyway, the memory. You're holding my hand. You're cutting my fingernails, and I'm crying. First, because I'm expecting that the procedure will be painful. Later, because it doesn't meet my expectations. It feels like nothing, and the feeling of nothing is disorienting. I remember your large hand holding my small hand. You're being so careful to clip the nails off my tiny, tiny fingers. I remember that sponge bath, too, and how I was so scared the water would be too cold. But it wasn't, to my fevered body. It was just cool enough. Theo arrived first, wearing a khaki shirt. He lingered at the threshold. I told him I liked his shirt. He said he had advice on it. He asked a waitress what he should wear on a date. She'd told him a khaki shirt. "Is this a date?" I asked. "It's Christmas."
"It's never not worked," he said.
A pause, and then he took my wrist and knocked my knuckles to the wooden doorframe. Next was Uncle John with Lisa, then Bonnie with her parents, and a macaroni salad heavy with mayonnaise. John set up the bar, and for the rest of the night he played bartender, putting eggs into drinks. Golden slippers, which are apricot brandy, chartreuse, and a yolk. The whites he saved for September mornings. Rum, brandy, lime juice, and grenadine. He was using real limes because he hated those squeeze bottles, and so a line was amassing for the drinks, out the kitchen and into the living room. John squeezed each lime individually, and one had to smile patiently if one wanted a good drink, because he was testy otherwise, as usual. You carved the turkey, and you carved the ham, and we drank John's cocktails, and you binge-drank Shirley Temple's. And Dad, you were making fun of Mom's affinity for reggae, which she blamed us for. She only got into it because we loved dancing to it as babies. And Uncle John was talking angrily about his neighbors who own cows, and Lisa was pushing her hand lightly on his arm as if to say, "Easy now." And everybody was holding paper plates that were bending into parabolas with the weight of all the food. And much later, after everybody is gone, and when it is just the 4 of us again, and we've dealt with all of the dishes, this is what you do. You turn the low doorknobs, and we walk single file out the door, staying within sight of one another, in our light-colored clothes.
"Testing, testing," Linus says over a walkie-talkie.